let's go ahead and get started. I have a little bit of a intro here that's going to take up a couple of minutes before we get into the meat of things. So let's go ahead and get that rolling. Again, welcome to today's Let's Be Frank conference call. Today is Thursday, March 28th, and I am Todd Miller, president of Isaiah Industry, the company that sponsors these calls. Really quick, before we get started, have a tiny bit of trivia for everyone. Everyone will probably remember this, or almost everyone will. Today is the 40th anniversary of the beginning of the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant failure. Located on a sandbar in Pennsylvania's Susquehanna River, the power plant was just 5 years old when disaster struck. Due to a pressure valve failure, cooling water contaminated with radiation drained into buildings adjoining the number two reactor, and the core began to overheat. In the 4 decades since that disaster, no new nuclear power plant has been built in the United States, which I thought was interesting. I did not realize that. So on that note, again, I welcome you to this call. Isaiah Industries is a leading manufacturer of specialty residential metal roofing. We sell our various aluminum, steel, and copper shingle, shake, tile, and slate profiles through leading home improvement contractors throughout North America and beyond. Our focus as a company is to always bring the most value possible to our customers, and we do that through various calls, newsletters, and events, as well as training sessions held on location with our customers. In fact, I wanted to mention that because one of our biggest training events is our annual Metal Roofing Summit. The 2019 Metal Roofing Summit is coming up in just a little over 2 weeks. The summit will be held here in West Central Ohio, April 15th through 17th. We have an absolute powerhouse lineup of speakers for that event, covering topics such as lead generation, appointment setting, in-home sales, and installation management. A big part of the focus of this year's summit will be on the changes that are occurring right now in the construction industry. Those are changes which I believe will dramatically change how we all do business over the next 5 years. So I don't think you want to miss this event. And registration for the Metal Roofing Summit is absolutely free. You can view the full agenda and also register online at metalroofingsummit.com. I do hope you'll join us, and I encourage you to go ahead and register today, because we need to have our final counts to the caterers the first of next week. So the sooner you register, the better. So in today's call, you will hear from Frank Farmer, president of American Metal Roofs. Based in Flint, Michigan, American Metal Roofs for 20 years has been a leading specialty metal roofing contractor. Frank has proven himself to be a leader who can adjust to changing times, and who along the way is always happy to share what he's learned with others and to learn from them as well. Frank also has a consulting business that works closely with metal roofing contractors who desire to be all that they can be. Through that organization, which is called Metal Roofing Consultants, contractors can take advantage of what Frank and his team have learned and perfected over the years. Joining Frank on the call today is Jim Anderson, also no stranger to our industry. Jim heads up marketing for American Metal Roofs, and is also a gentleman who is happy to share what he's learned. During today's call, Jim will be interviewing Frank, and we'll also have some time at the end of the call, I'm sure, for questions. Again, I thank you for joining us for the call. As a note, today's call is being recorded and will later be available through the Residential Metal Roofing Executive Report, which is located at executive-report.com. That's executive-report.com. So without further delay, Jim Anderson and Frank Farmer, I turn it over to you to take it away.
Thanks very much, Todd. This is Jim Anderson from American Metal Roofs. I'm the marketing manager here. And just by way of a little bit of background, I've known Frank probably since the early 2000s when he was one of my clients, and I had a small advertising agency at the time. Frank decided in 2007 to buy the company and bring it in-house. So I've been in-house with American Metal Roofs since the beginning of 2008. I've known Frank for quite a while. Frank, we're going to cover a lot of topics today. Are you there?
I am here. Yes.
All right. One of the things that we wanted to establish at the top of the conversation is if anybody has a question at all during our conversation, please feel free to jump in and ask. This is intended to be for your benefit about anything that Frank has any experience or knowledge with. And, you know, that includes marketing. If you have marketing questions and advertising questions, I'm also here to ask those or answer those questions. And without any more ado, let's get into this. Frank, you've been in business for 20 years with American. You've sold over $80 million worth of roofs. What do you attribute that success to?
You know, that's a 30,000 foot question. In the reality, Jim, if I had to look at one thing, it really boils down to the slogan that we use inside of our company that says, do the right thing. And when we take a look at doing the right thing, so many things fall into place. But if I say components of our business that make us unique, it definitely is our people, our values as a company. But then it goes beyond. It goes developing in the company. And we have dedication to training and employment, or employee development, systems. Our commitment to quality, that's where our products with Isaiah come into play. Our commitment to customer satisfaction. But when everybody talks to me, they always want to know, so how is it that you generate a couple thousand leads a year? You know, sure. And I think that's what we do.
Let's explore some of these topics, Frank. So start with people. Talk a little bit about your people at American Metal Roofs.
Well, first of all, Jim, We don't just hire friends. We just don't hire anybody. We really work on hiring the right people and try to play to their strengths. And I know everybody's sitting there listening to calls and say, well, I try to hire the right people too. And then you start digging in a little deeper and find out that the methods in which they're choosing people maybe not be best for them, and to get caught just a year, 2 years, or maybe 6 months with a wrong hire, that's expensive. So we're always recruiting people. And we're always interviewing. We're always looking for those good people. For instance, the two biggest areas that we're always looking to hire is in our installation. Those on the call, we operate with an employee model. And we're always looking for sales. We are not a turnover company, so we're very slow to hire. In other words, a thorough interview process. A second interview by other people inside the company, and for sales, it might be by a salesperson to make sure chemistry's right. Give everybody open disclosure. It's not about selling somebody on an idea to come work at your company. It's got to fit. You don't oversell them. But big thing that has led to our successes is to DISC profile our people. And we use a DISC profile that they will take. It takes about 10 minutes, and it will tell us a lot about people. Tell us not only are they the personality that would succeed in that area. For instance, if they're going to our call center, is it the right personality that can handle the abuse on the phone from the customer? It does no good to have the wrong people in the place, Jim. And then we work on building those people. But we have quality people in our company and employ about 45 to 50 people at any given time.
Okay, so the DISC profile is sort of where you start with working with your people and bringing them into and understanding where they're at and how they're going to fit into the AMR culture. Then you mentioned values. What are the company values that you feel are driving things for you?
Simply do the right thing. The golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. In other words, we constantly talk among our sales force, because they're the leading people out making promises to people, is to never overpromise. But then underlying, we're always talking about never do something to somebody. I've been around the sales business since the mid-1980s and home improvement sales guys, and they always talk about what they did. You hear them about popping customers. You know, and that's a term that's used in sales when they sell somebody a window for $1,000, they normally would sell it for $500. They gouge who they can. They call it popping. We're never going to do something to somebody. We're only going to help them. We are solution-oriented sales process, consultative type of sales process. So our value system really is around do unto others as you'd have them do unto you.
So that involves then, I would guess, a pretty heavy degree of training.
It really does. And we can talk about Jim and the group. And guys, please, as we're going through, if you've got questions, just blurt in. You know, when we start talking about training, for instance, we'll train millennials different than I'll train a sales force where my average age is probably near 50 years old. So, but one thing that runs through our company is taking people that, taking them where they're at, and growing those people. If I was going to say from an install perspective, when I start working with companies through metalworking consultants, and they want to talk about their millennial problems, they want to talk about how do you get these kids to work is how they always refer to them, and we just don't have those problems that other companies are having, but we approach it differently. In other words, if I want to hire a millennial, I need to have an environment that a millennial is comfortable working with. I was working with a company last week. I'll give you an example of that. And we were talking about building up his installation department and how he builds middle-level management. And his whole company was based on people that were 50 years old, 55 years old, paid their dues, smart people, I'm sure. They installed at one time, but they employed what I would call a hazing mentality. They felt that the new guys coming in had to, in some sort of way, go through this ritual and this rite of passage to rise up to their level instead of coaching and mentoring those young individuals. And so they had all kinds of problems that were there, and they never really got to the training part because the people couldn't handle the people, the punishment that was being handed out when they first got there.
So Frank, how does AMR work around a situation like that? Because I think that's fairly common.
It really starts with, Jim, the management team understanding that that problem exists. I can remember the first time that I witnessed it in my own company when I seen it happening on a job site. Now, we're talking about just the installation. Sales has its own set of challenges, and if we can come to that a little bit later, but I want to stay on the installers because that's where we have our young people and have our millennials, and in our call center,
sure,
we have millennials, okay?
Sure.
So, but I witnessed it with, you know, it's not okay to scream at people. Years ago, that's the way they communicated, and that was an acceptable way. They just say, well, you know, guys will be guys, and that's just what they're going to do. And although I may not like it, that was what was – it was tolerated. It was no different than everybody else. I heard it and seen it, but it didn't really register. Nowadays, the people just walk off the job. So when we hire somebody, let's say, into install, the very first thing we're going to do is put them through some training. They may have, and it's going to be different depending on different time of year, but generally if it's in spring and we're ramping up, because in Michigan, there's not a lot happening from about 15th of December till literally the 1st of March. We're still installing some roofs, but the reality is the weather can be brutal out there. So as we're hiring more people for our new roofing season, let's say in March, we may have those new hires on a roof. We have a roof that's built in our warehouse where they can practice and they can learn ventilation. They can learn how underlayment goes down. They learn the different components instead of just getting thrown out onto a job. Later in the year, we may hire somebody and we're filling in a crew, and they may have less of that and more OJT, but they're going to be assigned to somebody who's going to be helping them, somebody who's a mentor to them. That's the go-to person.
Really a mentorship model rather than what you've seen in the past then.
Exactly. Jim, in the past, people would come into a company, and they had to find their own way. And whether I like it or not, the the young men that we have there coming into the workforce right now have been coddled a little bit more. They grew up different. They grew up in a different environment. And so we're asking them to change that environment and not be coddled, not be coached, not be mentored, not looked after. But they're incapable of making that giant step. We have to help them incrementally, and they become sure. real faithful to our company.
Sure. Frank, let's circle back to something you brought up just a couple of minutes ago. The sales training and the sales boot camp that you put on. Talk a little bit about that and why that's so important.
Yeah, sure. Well, understand that when I'm training salespeople for metal roofing, I'm looking for a guy who is a little older. Probably going to be 45 at least, and not that I'm prejudiced that they're better salespeople. They handle the size of ticket, the dollar, much better. Okay, in other words, a millennial that comes in, a 25-year-old trying to sell metal roofs that are 40, 50. Our average roof is 42,000. So, yeah, it's a big ticket. Okay,
sure.
So that. A guy coming in that's young has never made a $40,000 purchase. And they choke on the price. They're not comfortable. And that customer, you know, every single presentation we ever do when we deliver price, we get one response from the customer. And that response is, that's a lot of money. Okay, and when they get that response, a young guy tends to panic. Where an experienced guy, you can teach him just to say yes, it is, and understand that's not an objection, because yes, it is a lot of money. But he's already bought a $40,000 car. He's already bought a $200,000 house. He may have already done a home improvement or an addition that was $50,000, $100,000, $125,000. He's made those purchases. He may have already bought a cabin or a second home or an investment property, and has made those purchases of that size, where a young guy hasn't. So we're talking about a 50-plus or 45-plus salesperson. The guy I interviewed this morning was 58. Okay.
So yep. You bring him
in. Go ahead.
No, I was going to get some details on the boot camp. You bring them into a week of pretty intensive training to sort of kick things off, or bring the veterans back in for sort of a refresher through the boot camp.
Exactly. When somebody's going to come in, they're going to go through a week of intensive training. What does that entail? 8:30 to 5 o'clock in classroom setting. They're going to have 2, 3, 4 hours of homework. A lot of guys tell me they're up till 1 o'clock in the morning doing homework, and they're back in class next morning. It takes a lot of energy to learn a planned presentation and to be able to execute it and come out and sell right away. But we're talking about generating guys that are coming out now selling $1.2 million, $1.5 million. My top rep this so far this year, it's his second year, and he's already at over $500,000 in the first 11 weeks of the year. So this is meat and potatoes, where people learn to sell, and it's intensive. We keep classes small, so it's about one-on-one, and then we allow people to go back a second time. I've had people go 3 times through and pick up the things that they missed the first time too. So yes, it's intensive. But that's
you have, a, you have another boot camp coming up, another couple, I think, don't you, in the spring?
Yes, it's too late for anybody to get into the one that we're going to run April 8th. But there is another one that's planned in May. If somebody would like to email me at frankf@americanmetalroofs, I'd be glad to give them some dates and see if it's really for them. It's not for everybody. It's
So once you get these guys, through this intensive training at the boot camp, what are some of the ongoing techniques and things that you do that keep your sales team fresh and keep them focused?
First and foremost, when they come out of boot camp, they're going to go into a mentoring program, and that they're going to be assigned to a mentor. And that mentor is not their boss. That mentor is just that, a mentor, somebody who's going to help them, somebody who's going to coach them along, somebody they're going to get to ride along and see what that person does. Take some criticism from maybe and say, hey, I just heard you say this, don't say that. But it's all as a mentor and done very caring so that they don't feel lost. They're coming into a supercharged sales organization. They quite honestly, they walk into their first meeting and the guy says, well, I sold 120,000 this week. And the other guy, well, we had one guy last week, so 110,000, took him five sales to get it, had to sell a couple of Ridgeman jobs along with it. But he had five sales. Okay. And sometimes that's intimidating. But we got to work them into that group. First of all, Jim, everybody in our sales organization, if we hire somebody new, they understand their role. And their role is to make that person feel comfortable. So they're warm. They feel part of a team when they come in. So first thing is to mentor them. Second thing is every week we have sales training for them. So besides being able to ride along with a mentor, we're looking at the results daily. They will put them into our CRM system. They scan their documents in. We can see what their survey question answers were, answers to the survey questions, how they presented price, what was written down, how far they worked the job down. And we can start to see patterns develop that we can help that rep with day by day. But then they get good, solid weekly training on a weekly basis. And that's quite honestly what a lot of our dealers tie into also here and tie right into our training, Jim.
Okay, well, how do they tie in?
When we're working with a company, we give them access to a code and then go online and literally participate in our meetings by they watch it via video. And they're able to respond by typing in onto a screen and ask questions. And we include them and put the results, and they're able to benchmark how they're doing compared to other salespeople. And they compete against our salespeople. So if they've only got one or two salespeople, sometimes it's a little difficult to run a sales meeting. But when you're part of something bigger, it helps them. That's how we kind of
hear. Sure. And then, Frank, to wrap up on the training side, what about at the management level? How do you implement training at that level?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jim. Really is. And I will say when companies want to grow, and you know, there's some natural barriers that are there. We see that companies will go to, you know, 700,000, 800, maybe can make it to a million as a single operator. But to take that up thing, their business up to 2.5 million, 3 million, they need to start developing a management team. And then it's a whole new step when you're trying to get above 5 million in one of these businesses. And those are the natural plateaus and barriers that people have to overcome and requires different levels of management and training for them. But initially, we started having exposure, giving our people exposure. So, Jim, if I was to coach a company that was doing, say, 700,000, and I wanted to move them on to be the next level up to $2.5 million, very first thing I would tell them is they've got to take their key people and look at them and say, well, what key people? Well, they're going to need somebody that's going to work in an office that's going to have to understand this operation, and they're going to need somebody that's going to eventually involve in the ordering product and maybe run the install side of it. It could be in a courier with an expanded list of duties. But those key people that they're starting to identify that might move into a manager, they need to start giving those people some exposure. Excuse me. So I just did get done talking to several of the people that are working with our company and advise them that they need to get 2, 3, 4 people at the Metal Roofing Summit that's coming up here in a couple of weeks. And had to explain to them that they, you know, you don't know what they're going to come away with. But to grow an organization, if the only person that knows everything is the guy at the top, he becomes a bottleneck, and that's what strangles companies. So I've encouraged them to take more people there. With more knowledge, those people start to take ownership, and you start to see them leadership coming up. So that's the first step, Jim, is to give them exposure. Okay.
So you also mentioned American Metal Roofing's commitment to quality. Can you flesh that out a little bit? What does that entail?
Jim, I can, but if I could, I want to go back a little bit and talk about, let's say a company's at 2.5. How do you develop that manager that's going to take you to 5, maybe 7 million? And the toughest thing for business owners is to let go. And business owners always want to use a leave alone zap. And I remember, I think I read about that in the 1 Minute Manager. And they just leave a guy alone until he ain't doing good and then come along and belittle him. Instead of understanding that you're the partner with that new manager, he needs a mentor. She needs a mentor. And they will grow in responsibility, but only if you give them that responsibility, explain what you're looking for, and then have them bring their results back and over a period of time put them in charge of something so that they grow. Used to be a fear of mine, many, many, many years ago when I was just learning management, some 30 years ago, that what if they don't do as good? I was confident in my mind they probably wouldn't do as good. And then I remember seeing some of these people blossom, and they had ideas that I didn't have. And it's like, oh, go, baby, go. And yes, they made mistakes. But the thing you have to do is let them make those mistakes. Don't let them die. But you let them make the mistakes, and then you sit and coach them, figure out how they made a mistake and what they would do different, and you grow those individuals and gradually hand over some power. Growing a manager doesn't mean you give them a bunch of stuff to do and then leave them alone and then show back up. You mentor them through the growth process, okay? So that's the next thing. So you asked me a question about quality, but I forgot what it was, Jim. Go ahead.
Well, the AMR commitment to quality, that was one of the aspects of the success of AMR that you mentioned at the top of the call, and I wanted to get into that a little bit.
Yes. That is first and foremost, Jim. In other words, when it comes, how do I say this? I'm going to say it tactfully, hopefully not hurt anybody's feelings. When I start working with companies, I'll ask questions like, so why do you sell that product? Why do you sell metal roofing and then you have this other product? And they may be putting barn metal on people's houses. And they say, well, you know, Frank, I'll give you one last night I heard when I asked that question. I was on the phone late last night coaching somebody. And they said, you know, we're having successes. Once we show them a $1,600, $1,800, $2,000 price per square for metal, we're having a lot of successes dropping to this other product. And I said, well, how does that benefit the customer? And the guy chuckled. He said, well, I guess it really doesn't, but it really benefits my pocketbook. And that's just wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong for many, many, many reasons. And that, so our commitment is to quality. If we can't do it and fix the customer's problem, we're going to say we're not going to do this job. And that's where, you know, teaming up with the right manufacturer. And this is not a commercial for Isaiah Industries. And there's some other good manufacturers that are out there. But I have, you know, $80 million in metal roofs installed, and we don't have quality problems. We have two service guys who, quite honestly, don't stay full, one on each side of the state. Their schedules aren't full. They have to go and work with the regular crew and install. So if you handle a quality product, and we get the majority of our products from Isaiah, they have the tremendous quality control. They deliver on time. They do all the right things. When you have that, you and you're in front of a customer, your commitment to that customer is so strong because you can talk about how strong your manufacturer is also in your commitment to them. We won't put subpar products on. If something is a problem, it's going to get fixed or we're not going to have it. You know, the right products, you don't put a quality metal roof on over felt paper, or you don't put a quality metal roof on over some cheap, inexpensive underlayment that's going to fail. That's going to cause that customer problems. That's not a commitment to quality. Remember, our motto is don't do something to a customer, help the customer. Don't do anything you wouldn't do on your own house. So in every product that we handle, we're only going to handle quality, and we learn to sell up to that price, not down to where the customer wants to be, because the customer doesn't understand that that's going to hurt them. Okay, that's what I mean with our commitment to quality, Jim.
Sure. Well, let me challenge you a little bit on accountability then. So you've got a commitment to quality. It's part of what you're doing. How is that measured, and how can you look at that and see how you're doing against that standard?
Okay. Well, two ways that I can think. The very first way is you have to measure what the customer experiences with your company. And when you have that commitment to quality, it starts with your commitment, personal commitment to that customer. What I was just talking about. But then how do you measure that? There are services out there that you can use. We happen to use a company called Guild Quality. And through Guild Quality, we give them every job that we do. We give them that information, how to contact that customer. We do not coach our customers on what to say or how to rate us. I want some honest feedback. And in that, they will ask, there might be 15, 20 questions that are in the questions that they ask. And we survey every one of our customers in a lot of areas. I'm able to rate each department all the way from how did the call center do? How are the communications with our customer? How was the communications with our customer concierge? And we should talk a little bit about that too, Jim. That's a huge point for our company, customer concierge, okay? We measure sales. Did sales do what we say they were going to do? Did they care about it? Did they perceive that we solved their problem? Did they trust the sales guy? And then all the way through install, we have questions in there about our finance department and our front office and how they rate the overall experience with our company. So we're able to see at the drop of a hat if we're slipping in an area. And from time to time, we will. We'll see our marks coming down. But that's our gauge, first gauge. We don't wait for people to call us with problems later on. If our people aren't communicating with that customer well, their marks won't be as good. And so much of that customer experience goes beyond quality of product, goes with quality that the customer feels that they were taken care of. Did they feel special? And that's what drives this business, the experience of doing business with American Metal Roofs. Okay.
So it sounds like American Metal Roofs, through some of the things you've been sharing with sales and commitment to quality, that American Metal Roofs culture or the company is managed through systems. Talk a little bit about what you built into the company in terms of systems.
Sure. Well, Jim, when the company was small and it was just me, the systems were easy. Because I knew them all, and you had to do this, and went from box A to box B, and how to make a folder, and all that. The system that I'm talking about is a much bigger system now. In other words, excuse me. If I take a look at our company, we have a whole marketing system that you and I have developed here. Okay, that generates last year 6,000-7,000 leads that boiled down to 1,600-1,800 appointments. We have a system for marketing. Once we generate that lead, then the next thing that's going to happen is it's going to go into a call center. The call center has a system. It's all scripted in how that customer is contacted, how many times they're going to be contacted in the first day, how many phone calls will be made before we text and email, what those follow-up texts and emails will say. That's all scripted. We do not leave it to individuals trying to figure out what to say and what to do on the fly. It costs way too much money, and that's why we have the successes. After that lead comes out of the call center, it's going to go to a salesperson. We use a CRM system. The one that we use is Lead Perfection. It's given to sales department. They have prescribed time to be there. They know exactly what their presentation is. They know exactly the systems that they're going to follow all the way from doing the presentation to their inspections to their measure and what's expected if they sell it and what is the system for writing up that order. And that paperwork needs to be loaded into computer by 8 o'clock the next morning. Systematized. Everything is a system, and people just learn to operate on the systems. So then that order then will go and it's loaded into a system and somebody's going to approve that sale. That sale then is released. If it's an acceptable order by the company, everything is double checked. But the salesperson did it right. All the T's are crossed and I's are dotted and everybody has a clear understanding of exactly what's going to happen. Then that is released to our install department. When that says, when that order is released to the install department, the very first thing that's going to happen is we employ somebody inside of our company who acts as our customer concierge. That is that person's main duty. They're calling up that customer. They're reviewing every line of the contract to make sure that we're all on the same page. If that customer concierge even feels at all that this customer is not happy, confused, maybe was disoriented, were they drunk when they signed a contract, that they're just in a misunderstanding. That order is not processed. And we're going to get involved at a management level to try to figure out, is this a real deal? Meet with that customer, get clear understanding, or cancel that order.
Okay. After going deeper into customer satisfaction, talk a little bit about your crew leaders and their communication with the customers and sales communication with the customers.
Okay, and we'll do that. So then, I'll tail it right on to where I was at with that customer concierge. So then that order then is going to go and be produced, product ordered. Then the next step, it's going to get handed off to a crew leader. Okay. So when we start talking about customer satisfaction with a crew leader, our crew leader and crew will go up to the house to introduce himself to that customer and build a relationship with them, exchange phone numbers, tell them they want to talk to them daily. They'd like to have communication with them a couple times a day if they're around, that they want them to look at the job as it's being installed. If there's quite a question on something, if they see something they don't quite like, bring it up immediately so we can tell them why we have to do it that way or figure out a solution that the customer likes, maybe aesthetically. But the whole goal is to get a bond built between the customer and that crew leader. But Jim, we have to back up, and that starts with the salesperson edifying install. And so that part of our warm down packet is to talk about the guys who are on install and how it is that they're going to get a great job. And these are human beings. And if it's cold outside, they need hot chocolate. If they want real favor, give Gatorade in the summertime. And we just grease those skids and start talking about how great they are and getting the customer set up to take care of those guys. When you're taking care of people, you're a lot less critical. Okay, and we form and forge that bond, and there's smiles when they hit the door. That's not normal construction business, okay? So we grease it right there, and then we do a customer walk around at the end. We've also, during our sales process, talked about how important safety is. And Jim, as you know, we have a safety director at our company. And so a customer may see our safety truck show up and get out, and they're not surprised by it, but it's all communication. You know, they see this truck pull up, it says safety all over it. You know, we don't want to alarm the customer, so they know that there might be a safety truck that shows up and it's going to inspect the crew and make sure that we're safe. It's about everybody working together, you know, through that communications. When we sell a job, we don't just leave the customer to be. The sales rep is responsible for communication with that customer. Concierge is feeding information back to that salesperson. Then when they call, they just keep everybody in the loop. So the job goes smoothly, and I don't have a receivables problem on the other end. We're never chasing money. Our jobs just get paid. The money's waiting because there's clear expectations of what's going to be done at the end of the job. So when I talk about communication, that's really what I'm talking about when we talk about crew leader communication or we talk about sales communication.
Okay. And the leave behind packet is part of that as well. There's lots of information in that packet that you designed to sort of bridge that gap between the sale and the installation, correct?
Yes. That system of that leave behind packet, Jim, is first of all, it's an absolutely stunning and beautiful packet. And it is designed to enforce in the customer's mind that, yes, indeed, whew, I did choose the right company. It lays out everything. We help them with information on where their house may develop leaks later. I wrote a pamphlet, a booklet that's in there. Seldom do we get a roof leak. But darn, we get chimney leaks, we get skylight leaks, and it's not from our work. It's from the glass leaking on the skylight. It's because the mortar might be cracked, or they have a cracked chimney cap that the water gets in behind the chimney and gets behind, you know, behind the wall flashing or flashing we put around that chimney, and the customer thinks it's a leak. So we educate them ahead of time. You're not going to get a roof leak, folks. Here's the places that you may see leaks. You may see some moisture in your house here. This would be the cause if you've got wood siding. Show them some pictures. It's all in the little brochure. We talk about humidity. We were getting calls saying, since you've installed this roof, I'm getting moisture on my windows. And by putting that in the booklet, we eliminated all of that so that a person now, after they've gone through this booklet with our salesperson, sees that they talk to us about moisture on the windows. Oh, my humidity must be too high. See, the customer had moisture there before. They just weren't recognizing it. But after they spend all this money on a roof, they kind of have, their mind goes to work on, oh, maybe it's the roof that's causing this problem. But also in that leave behind is a page called Your Next Step. And that explains to them the customer concierge process. We have a copy, a summary of warranty in there for the manufacturer, summary of warranty of ourselves, and a value guarantee that's in there, along with a feel-good letter from myself. And so by the time you're done explaining all this and going through federal document, the lead booklet we do with every customer is also in there. By the time you go through the whole thing, Jim, it takes about 15, 20 minutes. But that's what we wanted it to do, so the salesman wasn't getting a check and running out the door. It gave them a time to warm that down. People would come down out of the ether. And we ran all of last year with about 11% cancellation rate, which is phenomenal on this side of the ticket.
Sure, sure. And Ben, what is the role of the concierge? You mentioned the customer concierge a few times. That's kind of a unique thing to AMR. What is the role of that person?
Well, it's a unique role, and I will say this is not an idea I came up with myself. I stole this, as many of my good ideas. But we implement it for the metal roofing and handle it totally different than a lot of other companies do. In that, what we had happening at our company that made me implement it was we would take a customer's check. At times we were running 4, 6, gosh, sometimes we got out as much as 8 weeks, 9 weeks on install. And then the customer would call back in kind of scared. They may say, you know, I haven't heard from you guys. And we start seeing some late cancels for crazy reasons. They were making up excuses, and it was causing us all kinds of problems. Excuse me, I'm coming down with a little bit of a cold here. We developed a position called customer concierge that starts with building that relationship after the sale, making sure that customer's comfortable. That customer concierge then not only reviews contract, but they set up a time to have contact with that customer based on that customer's timing and how many times they want to be contacted. Some customers say, well, just give me a call a week before and, you know, we'll get things set up. Other customers, they want to hear from us every week. I will tell you, we get such positive conversations going that those two become friends. What you do not want is your customer buying this expensive product and feeling they're left out in the cold.
Oh, sure.
So they can pick up the phone, call the company, talk to our customer concierge, and they have relationships. So I go by their office and hear them talking. You know, did you get that pie made? You know, on that level, it's incredible. So the customer concierge has been a big part, and they talk to them during the install also. And they're very crucial at the end to say, now on Friday when the crew's finishing there, you know, you need to have your check ready. And they're jostling with the customer back and forth. It is laughing. It's fun. It's a good relationship.
Yeah. We've heard lots of great stories about those relationships with customers and crews and customers and our customer concierge over the years. I think those are great developments inside of AMR that really throw the focus on the customer and what they need and what they want. Want to shift gears here a little bit into an area that I'm a little bit more familiar with. I've been thinking about this. There's so much to talk about in terms of marketing and lead generation for American Metal Roofs. When we first started working together, you brought me into your vision for how leads should be generated, handled, et cetera. Why don't you talk a little bit about how you want to see that system work?
Yes, Jim, most people don't understand marketing, and I think we've got it pretty well perfected, and it's different for companies based upon where they're at. In other words, a startup company, a different marketing program is going to be there, and versus a company that has been around for, you know, 10 years and then they're taking on metal roofing, or for a guy maybe who's at 2.5 million or 7 million or 10 million. There are different stratas, but it should follow the same pattern. In other words, leads are generated. And then those leads immediately go into a CRM system. Mm-hmm. And here's where it breaks down when I start helping people with this process. Well, that person only wanted to know what the price was. That wasn't really a lead. And the answer to it is, yes, it was a lead. It's somebody who had an interest in metal roofing, and that should have went into the CRM system. And so, you know, they're so used to throwing away dollars. In other words, if you spent $1,000 and you got 20 inquiries, of which half of them only wanted a price and you didn't know how to handle it, you threw it away, then you only had 10 leads or 10 inquiries. So your cost per inquiry was $100 versus understanding you really had 20 and your cost per inquiry was $50. So the people that don't know how to handle a lead initially will not end up putting that lead into their system because they don't even know the scripting, and that's where we help people. Okay? In other words, I can get anybody that calls, I can get their phone number and their name 100% of the time, 100%. And it goes into the system. And then as you have conversation with them, you pick up more of the information that's going to fulfill their profile, or like address to the city. You get the city and you know what the zip code is. Then all you got to get now is the address. Okay. But generally with city and everything, I can get everything else off of the internet anyway. So those leads are going to come in, and then we're going to work those leads. Generally speaking, majority of our leads are not coming in via phone. Majority of leads are coming in through the internet. That is the method in which people want to contact our company, of the internet inquiries now, about 50% of them are coming in from mobile devices. So they're quickly typing in some information. They want to be contacted. They don't want to be bothered. And then we play the get a hold of them game. In our company, a lead has to be handled within 60 seconds. No exceptions. We employ 6 people. That's all they do. The only time we're not getting a hold of somebody within 60 seconds is if we're closed. And then we still have people who are working at home with an internet phone, and they're able to respond to people up to 8, 9 o'clock at night. Go ahead.
I was going to say that's where your screening and qualification is happening at that level. Once the contact is made, your team, the telemarketing team, is then handling the screening and qualification of the lead.
Absolutely. Salespeople never handle a lead because salespeople only want to know one thing. Do you got enough money? And they're going to talk price, and they're not going to get sales. People choke when they hear the price. So the girls don't know the price. The people that work in the call center, communication center, do not know price. They know how to get around that, to screen that appointment, for the criteria that they're looking for to set for real appointment, a real opportunity. Okay, and so out of those thousands of leads, we're going to set maybe 25% of them. If they're all internet leads in there, there's no sweepstakes leads, there's no home show leads, we might set as much as 50% of them. But it depends on what the mix is. So that's how we're handling leads. And I would say, in order of importance, a new startup company, first and foremost, needs to build an internet system, a website, and then a CRM to take in leads. And I'll tell you why it's so important. When we're away from a point in time that the salesman held all the information and the people had to call you for information, People go to the internet now for their information. So they're checking you out on the internet. If you do not have a good website, you are not seen as credible. You could be the best master installer out there, best company in the world. If you do not have a presence that's dominant and very nice on the internet, you're going to have great trouble. You're losing the majority of your leads because people are checking you out before they even contact you.
Frank, talk a little bit about your philosophy of a lead generation website as opposed to a brochure site. We've had a lot of conversations about that over the years.
Yes, we have. Okay. Just looked at another one yesterday, Jim, and they spent a lot of money, spent $18,000 putting this website up, and they can't get a lead out of it. But it is beautiful. Okay. A lead generation website needs to have several contact points that are on those pages. And the customer needs to see themselves in that site, in that home. It needs to resonate with them. In other words, I looked at one yesterday that is a company trying to break into the metal roof business. And they're so proud of this site. But so frankly, the site don't work. And I went to it and I was uncomfortable looking at these $1-3 million mansions of all these Photoshop pictures that were just glorious inside. You know, they were also a window company and they're doing windows and metal roofing. And well, no, I felt uncomfortable. And I'm a person of means. And it just wasn't our customer. And when I went to their photo gallery and looked at houses, they picked all the real expensive houses, you know, up on cliffs and, you know, stuff that just wasn't real. You need to have real people. Down home, inner city pictures, the customers that you're selling, they got to feel warm, friendly. There's got to be pictures of people in the website and not of 28-year-olds. That's not who buys this product. It's they've got to see themselves in the site. Then you have to offer something in the site that people want, that they're willing to give you their information for. There's a small percentage of people that are going to hit contact me. Now, we get a lot of that. That's because we have brand awareness. I've been out there for 20 years. A new startup does not have that. But the way we did it was we had something the customer wanted. We had an expertise. They could see we were experts. And it resonated with that customer. The sites that do not work are the absolute glamour sites that you go to. They talk not to the customer. They talk about themselves a lot. I see page after page of why this guy is now going to be in this business. And it doesn't resonate with the customer because it's not about them. The customer's only interested in one thing. What's in it for me? WIIFM is the radio station they listen to.
Okay. Sure. Speaking of media, talk a little bit about you know how we've directed media because the questions come up all the time about does radio work? Does TV work? You know, looking at the media as the savior or the you know this is the way to get leads. We took a little bit of a different philosophy with the media. Talk a little bit about our jingle and how that's all come together.
Okay, I sure will. You know, Jim, this ties in. Those online. I was down at a meeting for 2 days in Orlando, Florida, with a lot of prominent home improvement companies. There's 28 companies represented there, and we spent a half a day talking about marketing. And it resonates with all the successful companies. Here's the formula that we use. We use the internet as a lead gathering mechanism. It is the funnel. We use media such as radio and TV to generate awareness, understanding that even though the TV commercial would say, call now, that's not what they do. They're sitting in their lazy boy chair. They're going to their phone, checking you out on the internet. And oh, by the way, your internet site better be mobile friendly. It needs to be set up for mobile so they get to it real easy and load real fast. And then that's how they contact you if they like you. They check you out. Okay? They're snooping on you. So, but what we did approximately, I think about a dozen years ago, Jen, is we hired a professional to come in and develop a jingle so that that jingle is 1 minute in length and it can play the whole length of the background of a commercial. or it can be a donut, a sing in, message in the middle, and a sing out. But more time than not, we're using the end of it, where we're singing out AmericanMetalRoast.com. And I'm not a singer, so I won't try it. But every commercial that has played for the last dozen plus years, people have heard it over and over and over. We have customers who sing it to us. So what it did was it gave us brand awareness and made it top of mind, but I never allowed us to spend money on branding. I only would spend money on lead generation. Our conversations, Jim, always revolved around what's my return on investment? Okay, what do we get? How many leads? What percentage of sales is it?
Exactly. And the jingle allowed us to build that branding in while we were getting offers and other messages across and just letting people know where to find us. Listen, Greg, it's 4 minutes to 12. The hour has flown by. I don't know if we want to open up for questions at this point.
Yeah, let's do that.
If Todd wants to come back and jump in and wrap up, we don't want to go longer than an hour, but it's been just flown by.
Sure. Thank you very much. This is Todd. Are there any questions? Well, it's been very informative hour, Jim and Frank. Thank you both very much. I had a question, and I should have written it down because now it completely escapes me. But I'll remember it so we put this have it on the next call. Did you guys have anything else? Frank, would you like to share how folks can contact you if they're interested in
sure.
talking about your consulting services or just picking your brain on some things?
Yes. And Todd, I want to let people know that consulting, paying for a professional to help you is not expensive. It really isn't. It's a cost of a part-time employee. And I want to say this. Where can you go get a part-time employee that can come in with knowledge and help you explode your business? And you pay as you go based upon your increased sales. That's the best part. We're just trying to help people. And I desperately want to help this industry. So the best way to get a hold of us, they can email me. I'm going to give you the American Metal Roofing is easiest to remember. frankf@americanmetalroofs.com. Or you can call our office at 810-963-0021. It's 810-963-0021.
Very good. Well, thank you both, and thank everyone for joining us today. We appreciate it. I think everyone knows how to get a hold of me, but my phone number is 1-800-543-8938. Always happy as well to talk with folks and discuss your businesses, discuss how to make you more successful, and just learn from each other as well. Every time I have a conversation, I learn, and I love that. So thank you very much. I hope you'll be able to join us for the Metal Roofing Summit. Just 2.5 weeks. Again, we need folks to register sooner rather than later for that so that we know we have food for you and everything. And that's at metalroofingsummit.com. So thanks so much. Watch for emails and also watch on LinkedIn as well as on the Metal Roof Installers page on Facebook. And you'll learn about future calls such as this as well. So thank you very much, everyone. Have a safe day out there and have a good day as well.